don't you get all en passant on me. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I'm Emmy Zero.
And folks, we have come to the end of 1991. We only had one actual feature episode.
Not the end of 1991 as a whole, but
September of 1991. Yes, I'm sorry. Folks, little inside baseball here. So we're recording these pretty good ahead of time now. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to edit episodes as we get them done. I am completely losing track of where we are in the chronology sometimes. I am taking very detailed notes because it is the only way I will remember. So, if I ever misspeak like that, that is why. I've recorded an episode. I am editing a different episode, and a completely different episode from that is the one going up that week that I probably still need to write a synopsis for. So it's something. But hey, we have gotten an episode out every single week so far this year, with one exception, and I made up for it. So, you know, we're on the ball here.
Yeah, we're on an absolute tear this year. So, speaking of tearing, let's talk about wrapping. Not like the music, though. Let's talk about wrapping up September 1991.
Yeah.
With these games.
Yeah, so
that was a really awkward transition.
No, that's
but I did.
That's fine. Yeah. We are pro awkward segues here. Yeah, you know, it's so wild thinking about that the first time that we played these games was so long ago.
Yeah.
I remember writing notes about these games in a cafe that no longer exists.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. And there's been we've played hundreds of games since the first time we talked about these games. Like, that's wild to think about too.
Yeah.
Sheer amount of the Super Nintendo's library that has passed through our hands since we talked about the first golf game and the first baseball game that we're going to see on the system. I guess it'll be interesting to see how our impressions of things have changed in the time since we played these originally.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say straight out of the gate, you know, I remember wrapping up 1991 the first time and both of us feeling, you know, pretty good about the state of, you know, the opening slate of games for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, we did. We definitely did.
I'm not sure I feel that same way about a lot of those games anymore.
No, I don't think I do either. I think that the cold light of perspective has made me look at these in a pretty different way in some cases. It's interesting to go back to them, but yeah, I know for certain I was a lot more positive on several games that we are going to talk about today than I am now. So,
yeah. So we're going to start with one game that I think I might actually still have a higher opinion of than a lot of these other ones. Mm-hmm. Let's start with PAL's Hole-in-One Golf.
Let's talk about HAL's Hole-in-One Golf. What's going on here?
Well, it's golf. It's made by HAL, like it says on the tin there. HAL, of course, being the, would you say, second-party Nintendo?
I think second-party is right, yeah.
Yeah.
Big players at Nintendo. And I got to say, the two HAL games that we're going to play today, to me, they feel the closest to first-party Nintendo games that we've seen on the system from anybody else. That doesn't necessarily mean they're as good as those, but they feel like they came out of the same vat.
I hear what you're saying. But in any case, you know, we got HAL's Hole-in-One. This is a very good golf game, or at least it seems like a good golf game to me.
Yeah, and I agree.
You know, again, this is, you know, we've talked about our issues with trying to talk about sports games on this show.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what I'm realizing is that my biggest problem with talking about sports games is that, you know, like, I can tell you if I enjoyed my time with something, but I can't tell you if I think that this is, you know, a significantly better one of these than, you know, like any other from its time.
Yeah.
Because I don't seek them out. And I also can't tell you if I think that this one is worth going back to in light of the fact that there have been, you know, 30 years of golf games, you know, come out since then.
Sure.
Because again, I don't have any interest in playing any of those.
I feel really similar, honestly. Yeah.
So that makes it hard to rank golf games, but let's talk about what this game does, you know, and to some extent, you know, we can then leave it up to the listener who, you know, if they like golf, if they think that this is, you know, worth their time. But, you know, this is a pretty simple, straightforward game of golf. I really like the different views that you get. You get a nice, you know, mode 7 look at the overall course before you, before you tee off.
Like a flyby, basically. I really like that. Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. You get a nice topographical map option that you can go into if you want to, you know, kind of get a little bit more detail about the layout of the course, which is probably most useful when you're putting, I would imagine.
Most useful, yeah. But it can be, you know, if you get yourself into like kind of a bad corner of the map, then it can actually be pretty useful for helping you figure out how to get yourself out of it too.
I think all that stuff's pretty good. It's got sort of a variation on the three click swing.
You know, I was actually kind of surprised to see that because I did not remember there being any of like the pre PGA Tour golf games that we play on here having any kind of version of the triple click system. But yeah, it's kind of here. Like, it's a little more awkward. I don't like the way it's visualized quite as much as I do in the PGA games, but it's pretty good. Like, it's pretty useful and effective.
Yeah. I just in general, I think the game looks and sounds nice. I think, you know, it's got a really nice, bright,
good music
music, nice, bright color palette. It's a good one of these. I enjoy it. Whether or not I think it's worth your time is a harder call for me to make because of all the reasons that I said at the beginning here. So
I feel like the main reason to play this one might be just to enjoy the vibe of it, frankly. Like, I mean, I think that it has like a good overall feeling to it. But yeah, I can't. I also can't really speak to how I think it is like in comparison to a lot of the other golf games. In terms of like whether this is actually what you would want out of one.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think, where is Hal's Hole in One?
I was just looking at it. I think it's a C tier game right now. I think we have it in C. No, it's a B. B-tier. We have it in B, actually.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, does it stay in B because we like it, or does this maybe need to go into unranked because we just don't feel qualified to really talk sports games? So what do you think?
I think we need to accept our limits and probably put this one in unranked because I do not know this genre well enough to make the call of saying, oh yeah, this is a good game that you should play. You know, it's pretty, I enjoyed my time with it, but I don't have the knowledge to say how this one should rank. Well, I think the music is good and I like all the green. So there you go.
Is this a good one of those? I don't know. So somebody who knows golf games, like, let us know. Let us know what you think of this one.
Yeah.
Maybe someday we'll have a guest on the show who knows golf.
Maybe. You know, I will say one thing for it, though. The presentation here is very simple, aside from those Mode 7 flybys. And in some ways, that does feel like a better choice for the Super Nintendo than when we get to the various T&E soft games with their, like, very elaborate kind of rendered, like, perspective shots of the golf course, just because it moves so much faster. So,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see when we get back to those eventually. What we feel, but yeah.
And also I don't T&E, they're like the true golf classics folks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I also don't really like their interface for, like, you know, hitting the ball where you've got to, like, select the thing.
The weird little dot that moves across the the ball for the hit. Yeah,
that doesn't work as well for me. But
yeah,
but there we go. So House Hole in One, unfortunately, being relegated to unranked.
Yeah,
but we think it's pretty good.
We think it's pretty good, and maybe you will too. So. If it sounds like you, if you want a simple, straightforward, but, you know, very, very attractively presented golf game, maybe look into it.
And that might be the end of the games that I have anything nice to say about today.
it's a rough road to hoe ahead of here. You want to talk about the other HAL game that we have on show today?
Yeah, let's talk about Hyperzone.
Hyperzone.
So this is a Z-axis shooter.
It's a forward scrolling. It's sort of like an attempt to use Mode 7 to do basically like a super scalar game, like a Space Harrier or something like that, I guess.
Just in case you're not familiar with those, basically you've got a behind the vehicle perspective where you are flying towards the horizon and things come at you and shoot you and as they come closer to you. Mm-hmm. And then you are shooting into the horizon at them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this is going for. This has got a very sci-fi, spacey theme to
it. Almost like an abstract theme in a way. It's a pretty cool looking game, I will say.
You know, so this game looks a little bit like F-Zero at first blush, or at first glance.
Yeah, but what if F-Zero had, like, the track mirrored on the top of the screen as well, so you were like heading into like an infinite point in the horizon.
One thing I don't think I truly appreciated the first time around was I was kind of thinking like, oh yeah, it's like F-Zero if the track was mirrored on the top and the bottom. Mm-hmm. But because your car can move up and down, you know, and isn't like just stuck to the track like it is often in F-Zero,
right,
you get like a perspective shift as you move.
You do, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty visually impressive.
Yeah.
And then you actually have to play it, and this game...
It all falls apart.
Yeah, it really does. This game is almost impossible to read visually. Like, the enemies, their shots, when they're coming at you, because they're also moving, but they're getting larger as they come closer to you. It's really, really hard to tell which way you have to go to dodge shots.
You also don't have a lot of room to maneuver because you are still stuck in a lane that is, I would say, probably narrower than most of the F-Zero tracks tend to be.
Yeah, which is strange. Like, why am I taking damage from being off the road when I'm not physically on the road? It's a weird, you know, it's a weird thing. But
I don't know. Yeah,
there's that. So it feels very claustrophobic. There's obstacles that are represented by like a single sprite, but that sprite is meant to be, you know, like, oh, hey, this is going like the entire height of whatever it is you're supposed to be in.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
This game is not very good, and it does not hit the highs of some of those classic, you know, Sega arcade super scroller games.
No, it does not.
Or super scaler games, sorry.
No, it does not really measure up to those. When we were talking about the games that, you know, launched with the Super Nintendo, we did call, I think, Pilot Wings and F-Zero to some extent kind of tech demo-y. And like, that's not untrue, but this to me feels much more purely like this looks like a tech demo that they tried to staple some gameplay onto and just did not really manage to make anything worthwhile outside of the visuals.
I mean, in a way, I agree with you. I think that in some ways, you know, saying that something is a really impressive tech demo maybe comes off as more of a backhanded compliment than it should, because this game kind of shows you that like being an impressive looking tech demo really isn't enough. Mm-hmm. Pilot Wings and F-Zero have
good games too.
Good gameplay. Yeah. They're fun to play. Like, they're not games that I, you know, go back to immediately if I'm looking for, like, if I'm looking for a racing game on the Super Nintendo, there's other games that I'm going to look to first, but it, there's still, like, solid fundamentals there.
Totally,
it's still
yeah.
a perfectly playable, fun game. Same thing with Pilot Wings, if you're looking for something like Pilot Wings. This game does not have gameplay that I can recommend, and this just kind of goes to show you that, like, you know, like, hey, if I say something's an impressive looking tech demo, that's still pretty good. This is an impressive,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's still a good tech demo. That's still pretty good. This is an impressive looking tech demo, but its gameplay is absolutely abysmal.
No, I did not have fun playing this. I made it. I was shocked that I made it into stage two of this game. Like, I did beat a boss in this, and like, man, the spike in difficulty immediately is just so ridiculous. And it's ridiculous because of all the stuff we've mentioned, that like, this is just a hard game to read and a hard game to control. And it's one where like your life bar disappears almost instantaneously once you start getting hit. Like, they didn't think to add things like invisibility or invincibility frames or anything
right
to your ship when you get hit. So yeah, it's not good. And like, HAL as a studio, as a developer, they definitely had really good technical chops, and really, like, they had, I mean, look, they'd been making games at this point. Some of them were really good at this point. But either they just couldn't crack this kind of game, or they had to rush this through really fast or something, because it is not up to the standards that I would expect from that developer.
Yeah. And, you know, when I say an impressive looking tech demo, I almost have to walk that back a little bit because of how unreadable those enemy shots are and everything. Like, that whole thing works clunky. And like, one of the big selling points of Mode 7 was like how well the sprites are going to scale and all of that. And it doesn't do a good job of that there. This is actually like a little bit damning to the Super Nintendo now that I look at it.
Right. You know? Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I would say this thing, the best aspects of this would work better as a screensaver than as a game that you have to play, you know?
Yes, you are absolutely correct. This is a C-tier game right now. I think it's got to drop.
I think it's got to go down.
Yeah.
It's got to go down.
D
or F, I guess, is the question.
I'm tempted to keep it out of F just based on how pretty it is alone, but I don't know if that's fair. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it is doing that one thing pretty well, really well, certainly. And it's got, I don't know, like, it's got some nice touches. Like, we didn't get into this, but like, as you go along in the game, like later on in it, you get different ships, and the entire HUD that surrounds the screen changes along with those ships, which is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, that doesn't make it a better game, though. That doesn't make it more fun to play.
No.
I'm
okay with it leaving it in D.
I think it can stay in D. I don't think it's so devoid of any merit that it's got to go into F, but it's not what I would recommend anybody really spend much time with.
Yeah. Yeah. That D list is getting real long. It's disappointing.
It's getting real long. Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to be the last game that drops today.
No, it's not.
All right, next up we've got Super Bases Loaded.
It's a baseball game.
Yeah, this one comes to us from Tosei and Jalico, who developed and published it respectively. Also, this is that weird, like, Ryan Sandberg presents Super Bases Loaded, even though, like,
yes,
he only appears on the cover and I think maybe the instruction manual and
right.
That's it. His name is not on the title screen.
No,
it's a baseball game. It's one of these weird it's one of these weird Bases Loaded games where when you're batting, the perspective is behind the pitcher and not behind the batter.
I hate that. I can't stand it. Like, even even with as little as I tend to like the baseball games on this system, just that perspective is just awful.
Yeah. And like, you can't move around the batter box. Like, you know, I mean, I grew up playing like RBI baseball, so I'm used to having like a little bit of movement around in the batter box and having like a better read on like, you know, if something is a strike or a ball and being like, yeah, okay, I can see why. It's really hard to tell what this game considers a ball and a strike to me, given the perspective on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think this is very good. But again, you know, like all the standard, you know, we don't really do sports applies here. So,
yeah, it's true.
I don't know. Did we end up putting this one in unranked like after our Sportsageddon or?
Let's see. It doesn't actually look like it.
Did I accidentally like remove it from the list entirely?
I think this one might have gotten raptured all the way out of the list.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. I'm not seeing it anywhere. It's got to just go into unranked, I think, because it's an incredibly bog standard baseball game, and certainly I think it's worse than a number of the baseball games we've played, just largely due to that batting perspective. But you know, it's also very far outside our wheelhouse. So
yeah. Right. That works for me. Sorry, Mr. Sandberg. Your baseball game is just not our thing, but I also suspect it's like probably bad for a baseball game.
I mean, look, it's not attractive. I would say that. Like, it's pretty ugly. It's got nice animations for pitching and hitting. But that's literally the only thing that is even like a little bit attractive about the graphics here. So, yeah.
It's a pretty limited game. And hey, while we're on the subject of limited games, do you want to talk about the Chess Master?
Yeah, let's talk about the Chess Master. The most unadorned, basic chess game you can possibly have. Who made the Chess Master?
This was developed by Software Toolworks, published by Mindscape International. Like, look,
it's chess.
Yeah, there was a game called Battle Chess that came out on like old Macintoshes, and I'm pretty sure there was an NES port of that, like where the pieces would turn into little characters who would fight each other and kill each other off. That was at least a fun way to present chess in, you know, video game form.
Right.
And you could also just play a regular game of chess if you didn't want that. This is just a regular game of chess. I think there's only one piece of music in this game that plays throughout it.
I think you can turn it off. I think you can turn the music off if you want to.
Okay.
But there's like a little, and yeah, there's like a little like music cue that plays when one piece takes another. But that's it. I think the appeal of the Chess Master series of games was that the computer AI was supposed to be a lot better than in something like Battle Chess. Like, I think the appeal of it was supposed to be you're playing against a realistically challenging opponent. But I don't really know how that holds up, you know, 30 some odd years later, you know.
I can tell you it holds up really poorly on the Super Nintendo, because I did watch some of Jeremy Parrish's videos on some of these games. Because the nice thing about going back to 1991 is that he did a SNES Works series for 1991.
What did the great man himself think about this?
He talks about how, like, at the higher difficulties, it will sometimes take the computer literal minutes, sometimes like 5-10 minutes to make a move, because it's got to run all those calculations, and the Super Nintendo is just not up to the task of that.
Oh god. Yeah,
so like, yeah, if you're looking for, you know, like a more challenging chess game, this is hamstrung by the fact that it will take you a long time to play through such a game. If you're just looking for a fun chess game, you're gonna play any other chess game on any other platform, because people already figured out how to make the game, you know, presentation wise, a little bit more fun. So,
and I mean, we cannot overstate how bare bones this presentation is. Like, free games you would get on like a CD-ROM with like 100 games look better than this.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a game where I know that there have been, huge advancements, even just like 10 years after this one came out.
Yeah.
In chess games, where like it would teach you, it would actively teach you how to be a better chess player. Mm-hmm. I don't think this game does that.
Don't play the Chess Master for the Super Nintendo, people. This is what we were saying. Like,
yeah.
Like, enjoy your life. Don't play this one. There's no reason to.
So our D list might get shorter here because it's in D right now, and I think maybe it deserves to be an F.
Yeah, I agree. I see absolutely no reason to recommend this thing to anybody.
Yeah, I do think this one, I mean, like, I guess it is technically a functional chess game, and in that case, maybe it stays in D, but, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't do anything special. There was really no reason to get it back in the day. There's definitely no reason to play it now.
I think it's one of those rare cases where even though there's, like, strictly speaking, nothing actually wrong with it, what's there is just so basic that I can't imagine why anybody would want to play this. I'm feeling the love for these ones today. We're sorry this is such a negative episode, folks. It's just like this sometimes. We would really love to be talking about good things about these games. There's just not much to work with here.
Yeah. I don't like being this negative, but sometimes you got to do it. But hey, let's talk about Populous.
Okay, let's talk about Populous.
I thought this one was kind of neat back in the day, but now I'm just kind of like, all right.
I can't imagine why I thought that. I know I did. I thought this was kind of interesting, but it's like, I don't have any idea why I thought this was good or interesting or anything. Yes. This is a Peter Molyneux game. This is a Bullfrog game, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, this is a Bullfrog and published, at least on the Super Nintendo, by Acclaim, and I think some of the porting work was done by Imagineering. This one's a little bit weird. Jeremy Parrish talks about a company called Infinity that handled the SNES port. I have never heard of that company before. I cannot find out anything about that company. That name is not anywhere in the credits, according to Moby Games or in the instruction manual. Huh. I do not know what Infinity is. So I don't know if he just misspoke and meant Imagineering, but he is also infinitely more connected than I am. So, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say
that. Maybe he knows something we don't. Yeah, but
yeah.
It is interesting, though. Well, whoever did it, they did a version of Populous for the Super Nintendo, and here it is.
Yeah, so Populous is a god sim in which you are the god of one people and there is another god who is the god of other people. And it is your job to get your people to completely annihilate the other people, which...
good vibes just keep on coming, huh?
Not to get too political, but wow, that sure does land a little differently in the current climate. Yeah,
it actually really does. It's not a thing I feel good about, like, indulging the fantasy of in a video game, like, truly.
Yeah, but all right, well, we'll put all that aside. This game is interesting in a number of ways. Like, I don't think it works particularly well on the Super Nintendo. This obviously was ported originally. It came out on, like, the Amiga and probably, like, DOS or some other computer systems. This game came out too early to be compatible with the mouse, even though it really, really needed the mouse.
Yeah, the interface here is kind of a nightmare, I would say.
There is a sequel to this game that did not come out in America, but it did come out in PAL regions that is compatible with the SNES mouse. So if Populous sounds like an interesting game to you, then maybe give Populous 2 a try. See if that works any better for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different, you know, variations on gameplay. You can, you know, make things, you know, you can kind of make different aspects of the game behave in slightly different ways. You can skin the interface you can skin the actual world to look differently. Like, you can make it look like a weird Candyland or a computer world or Samurai Land, mm-hmm. which I guess would just be ancient Japan. I don't know why I said Samurai Land.
I think from the perspective of this game, Samurai Land seems like an appropriate way to describe what they what they're doing here, you know. But
sure,
ancient Japan. And like this is interesting because it is very purely a god game and not. You know, like it is a game where you change the conditions for your people and then the people react like a little ant farm, essentially.
Yep. You basically, you know, you try to make conditions as good for your people as you can by flattening out the land so that they can, you know, kind of spread across and build bigger structures and also have their land meet up with the enemy land so that they can encroach on that territory. And then maybe upgrade some of your characters to knights to make them better fighters. And after that, they just, you know, hey, you know, you just got to hope that they win. You know, they're just going with God. Well, they're going with you now.
They're going with you.
But you're not directly controlling them.
Nope.
But here was my problem with it. Like, and maybe I'm just not engaging with this game correctly. And maybe it's just a little bit too complex for me. But it feels like this game is just a never-ending series of raising and lowering land masses to make everything as flat as possible and building up your armies in that way. Like that felt like 90% of the way I was interacting with the game.
I agree. Maybe
more than 90%.
It is the primary verb in the game.
Yeah. And like you can turn areas into swampland to make it harder for the enemy to build up their structures. You can create earthquakes and volcanoes to mess up the enemies and things like that. So there are other things you can do, but I felt like I was mostly just raising and lowering mountains and hoping my dudes got the upper hand. And it also like took me a long time just to get through like the first scenario. And there's so many of them and I'm just like, I don't know how long I would actually want to do this.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't know that the following scenarios are so different that they're giving you much to keep going with, you know, like it's, I don't know. Like, I don't find this compelling as like a form of gameplay. And yeah, like you, maybe I'm just missing layers of interesting complexity here, but I don't know. Like, this doesn't feel like novel or like make me curious about like what the possibilities are or anything. It's just boring work. I don't know.
Yeah. It just felt like an exercise in tedium.
This may be a complaint that I wouldn't have about other versions of the game, but there are just aesthetic things here that I think make the game really grating to me. Like, I feel like it is honestly kind of hard to like read the interface layout. It's an odd thing where like the various functions that you can perform are arrayed in one menu to so the world is presented in kind of like a three quarters view, and outside of your window showing the game world, there's one big row of vertically oriented buttons and another big row of horizontally oriented buttons, and you can switch between the horizontal and vertical rows, and everything's just conveyed via like little symbols, and I find it, it's like, you know, it's kind of like hat on a hat stuff. Like, it's already kind of an odd concept for a game, and the way you interact with it is further obscured, and I just find that very like frustrating, and it's just like it adds to the tedium, you know.
Yeah, like I felt like maybe, I don't know what it needed, like if the icons just needed to be a little bit simpler, to be more descriptive, you know, almost, you know.
That might help, honestly.
But also maybe like grouping like icons, you know, like you've got your disaster icons and then you've got your, hey, upgrade my villager icons, or, you know, make my villagers do something icons, you know, like it just all feels jumbled together in a way that's not intuitive.
I mean, once again, I think this game suffers badly in comparison to Super Nintendo SimCity, where they managed to make a simulation that is not actually any less complicated than this way, way easier to read just by virtue of how they put the interface together. and how they kind of lead you into it. So,
you know, I will maybe defend the aesthetics of this game a little bit. I think that, like, you know, the book with the overworld on it, the way all that's laid out is kind of inspired. I thought that, you know, the mana meter is okay. It's mostly just the way that those buttons are laid out on the screen. I think that, you know, that could have been organized better.
I agree. I know it kind of sounded like I was having a go at the overall interface design, but yeah, I agree. I think it is actually pretty neat looking, and I think it could work. I just don't think it works with the way they've chosen to, like, distribute the various, like, buttons and how they've decided to, like, depict those. The thing I do actually have a real problem with in this game is the sound design choices. There's this extraordinarily unpleasant, like, it's almost like a breathing sound that is always present underneath everything else in the game. And it actually does make my skin crawl in a way that I don't really have an explanation for, but I do not like that. And I don't really enjoy feeling compelled to, like, turn the sound all the way down when I'm playing the game. Otherwise it will bother me so much I won't want to continue. But that did actually happen here.
Going back to the gameplay a little bit, I also just remembered, like, because I didn't super engage with these mechanics when I was playing the game again, water and swampland and things like that, the way to get rid of those is just to raise and lower the landmass again. So it really is just like 99%
raise and lower
the land, and that's about it. So
yeah, and as far as I know, you're not working with any kind of an energy system. Like, you don't have to, like, gather faith from your followers to allow you to do any of that. So it really is just kind of, I don't know, plugging away at it, right?
Well, I think you do to some extent, but, like, yeah, raising and lowering the land costs so little that you'll pretty much be able to do it with impunity once you've built up your village even a little bit. Yeah, it's the other actions that actually, like, consume more of that stuff.
Oh, sure. But like we've said, you don't really do those very much, so.
Yeah, that just means that, like, you know, again, the game is enforcing, like, this is primarily how you play this, and it's not exciting.
No.
So, does this one drop down to D tier as well, you think?
Yeah, I think this one drops down to D here. We had it in C. I can't in good conscience put it in F because it does work. I just don't like it very much. Yeah, I don't know. Populous, good for you if you like it, is all I've got to say, I guess.
I mean, if you like it, you're probably playing it on a different system that has mouse almost controls.
Almost certainly, yeah. Once again, very, very little justification for playing this game on this system.
And moving right along, we've got the last game for September. It's...
Yeah, all right, let's wrap this thing up.
It's Final Fight. The first Capcom game on the system.
How auspicious.
Is Final Fight. This is a bad... Like, I don't even know why they bothered. This game is so stripped down.
It's a bad port of this game. It's a really bad port of a like kind of mainstay arcade game, like an arcade game that was, like, you know, realistically, if you'd been to an arcade in 1991, you probably had seen and played some of Final Fight. So you know what you're comparing this to. And this is a really rough port of it.
There's so many compromises had to be made here that I kind of question why they even bothered releasing this. Like, having only one, you know, like a one player mode available in F-Zero isn't the best thing.
At least that's still fun on its own, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Having only a one player version of Final Fight available is unforgivable. Like, why would you even do that?
So, yeah, what have we got? We are missing a character. We're missing Guy from the arcade game.
So you've only got two playable characters, and then, you know, like, the three playable characters were a big part of that game because they all played very differently. So the fact that you're losing one of them means, you know, like, that's not insignificant. You're missing at least one level. I think just one level.
Yeah, you're missing any kind of transitions between stages or different parts of levels. Like, it's really, presentation wise it's incredibly stripped down.
And I have to say, I just didn't have a lot of fun playing this again.
Nah, me either.
This game feels really cheap in a way that's like, you know, like up to this point, Capcom had been pretty good at like adapting games from other systems like arcades to work on home consoles, you know, like trying to figure out, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, like the economics of this are going to be different, right? Like you've already paid for the game. We're not trying to get people to pump quarters into a machine. How do we make this interesting within the context of a home video game? And there just feels like none of that insight here, you know?
No, this feels, I mean, it's a bad thing to say, but this feels as close to a cash grab as I can think of Capcom doing. Like, it's a very basic port of a popular arcade game that strips out a lot of stuff from it and doesn't add anything in replacement. And it's just like, and it doesn't even run well. Like, it looks and sounds pretty poor, and like it's got slowdown, it doesn't really feel good to play. It's just a shame overall.
Yeah, you know, kind of how like I sort of said that like Hyper Zone might have been a little bit of an embarrassment for the Super Nintendo, just given like how much better Sega did that kind of gameplay. Although I don't know if the Genesis was doing.
There is a Genesis port of Space Harrier. I don't know how it is, so I can't speak to that.
Yeah, I think it might not actually be. It might not actually be amazing. But in this case, like Sega already had some really good brawlers on its console, and like, you know, Jeremy Parrish kind of put it this way, and I don't like to just like regurgitate what he says, but it's so much just embodies the problem with this game that I think, you know, it's worth saying here. He basically kind of said that like Final Fight on the SNES looks good if you need some pretty screenshots for your magazine, but Streets of Rage on the Genesis just does everything that this game doesn't do.
Well, and it's wild too, because Streets of Rage literally came out the same month as this. Like, these were on store shelves as new games at the same time.
Yeah, this is a pretty dire game on the Super Nintendo, honestly. And like, you know, it just feels like the enemies feel cheap. Like, enemies have moves that can almost annihilate an entire health bar in one hit. You know, and you can get away with that to some extent in arcades because, you know, like, hey, do I want to keep going from where I just left off? Is it worth another 25 cents to try again? Like here, you know, you're going to lose a lot of progress and you've only got so many continues. So like, is it worth your time at this point? Or are you just going to play something better?
Yeah, I agree. Just do that. Just play something better. Please don't play this one. It's a shame. Like, I remember us having not much good to say about this back when we played it the first time, but I think we were a lot more forgiving of it just because, you know, it was the first one of these. So we didn't really, I don't know. We just like weren't thinking about all the ways in which this falls down, but it's so obvious and apparent. And it's just, I don't know. This isn't fun. Like, Final Fight's a good game. This is not.
Yeah, the character sprites are good and big, and they look correct until, you know, they're actually in motion. But
right.
But that's really all this game has going for it. And, you know, again, like the Streets of Rage sprites aren't as impressive in stills, but the gameplay is just so much better. And I think Capcom needed to scale this down.
It's so much better.
They needed to scale this down or not bother.
Well, and whatever they did, and whether it was the Genesis's hardware or just choices they made in the software programming, Streets of Rage had two-player co-op. So, you know, whatever sacrifices you have to make to get to that point, Capcom should have made those.
Absolutely. And, you know, and if it was too much to, like, basically remake this game from the ground up for the Super Nintendo, then I would say don't bother until like we're at the point where, you know, like maybe
just don't do it.
Memory mapper chips are up to the task of representing this game properly. But in any case, I think this one drops down to at least the D tier. What do you think?
It's definitely at least D tier. I'm trying to decide. It's not so broken that like it's less broken than a lot of F tier games, but it's so disappointing that I almost want to put it in there just for that reason, just for like how much of a, but I think with our methodology, I think with the way we tend to like conceive of this list, it is probably a D tier game, but oof, it's a rough D for disappointing. Yeah,
I think that's an appropriate place for it. And folks, I guess that's going to do it. Wait a minute. Wait a second. I've got something here. Let me rustle some papers here. This just in, a new challenger has entered the ring. It's Ultraman.
Really?
Yeah. We're going to talk about Ultraman because it's the only game that came out in October of 1991. And, it is not worth talking about in its own episode.
No, I guess it's not, yeah.
This one we knew was as bad as it is back then.
Yeah, we actually did. I think we were right on the money with this. This game sucks. Like, it's terrible. Yeah,
this was like maybe like the first game that we came across. It was like, this might be one of the worst games on the Super Nintendo. It was certainly at the bottom of our ranked list for a while.
Yeah, I honestly think it is still one of the lower tier. I think it is one of it is in discussion with the other worst games on the Super Nintendo, even still. It's a fighting game. It is, of course, based on Ultraman, the tokusatsu series, the long-running tokusatsu series. Man, it sucks. It's so bad. This is a fighting game with one, I think only the one playable character, right?
One playable character. Yep, one playable character, one player, I think.
Yeah, and it has a bunch of really odd mechanics that do not serve the gameplay at all. You build up a power meter the longer you fight the monsters as Ultraman, and you, I believe, actually have to be built up to the final like gauge, the final level on your power gauge to be able to finish off the monsters, even when you get them down to zero health.
Yeah, just nothing but
bizarre choice.
Nothing but bad decisions. And I know it's early days for the fighting game genre, but nobody made a good decision when making this game. It's terrible. It's already in the F tier.
It's ugly.
It does not deserve to be moved any higher than that.
No. Yeah, it's an F tier game through and through. I have never been more confident about the choices we made in the early days of this show than I am about Ultraman being one of the bottom ranked games, because it's horrendous. Like, as a, you know, I don't know what other Ultraman games there are. I'm sure there's a lot of them, but they've all got to be almost got to be at least better than this.
Yeah.
Like, even if they're not good, they must not be any worse than this, at the very least. So,
yeah, I mean, maybe
just play one of them. Don't play this thing.
Yeah, not an overly positive episode today, folks. Sorry about that.
It just happens sometimes.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, like, looking at the list now, you know, on our notes, I've color-coded everything by year, and you know, it's looking like a lot less of a robust lineup for that first year and more like a very feast or famine kind of thing. Like, we got some great games and we got some really terrible games and not a whole lot in between.
No, things are really moving out of that middle for sure. So, yeah, wow. So it is what it is, folks. You know, sometimes nostalgia is the sweetest poison. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
This is an interesting thing. It's definitely given me some different perspective on kind of the progression of the Super Nintendo as a system and as a home for games. Because I think that, you know, I have at times tended to think like, yeah, the Super Nintendo started off really strong and then some really rough times happened for it later on. But I don't know. I think it's always been kind of, you know, a mixed bag, as anything like this would be. And it definitely makes me feel better about the system as we look towards the future, which is the subtitle of this Ultraman game.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it, folks. Next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about the January 1994 issue of Nintendo Power. I'm pretty excited about that.
Me too. We're going forward. We're going to 94, finally, after being in... I think we've been in 1993 for...
A while.
Has it been a year? 2 years? It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. Now we're going to be in 94 for...
The rest of our lives.
Yeah, rest of our lives. We're never leaving 1994.
You can't make me.
No. please join us next time as we go through that Nintendo Power episode. And we hope that even though the games today were bad, more or less, across the board, we hope that you enjoyed listening to us talk about them. Until next time, I'm Amy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.